I mean, you go back to the very moment of conception, you see this electrical charge. It's this spark of life.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Fred, what have you done to the memory chip industry? Have you seen what's going on?
I have, and it looks like they've got a memory chip shortage. Now, I used to work at Micron.
I recently retired
from there. So, hey, what's going on over there? Well, I know one thing for sure, this chip shortage.
Yeah.
When I retired, like back in this last summer, the stock price was like around 100.
Yeah.
They're like 435 now.
Get out.
Yeah. 430 somewhere in there. I can't believe it. The thing's going through the roof because of this shortage. One of the reasons is a shortage on memory chips.
Oh.
And, you know, that's DRAM that helps you run in your laptops to NAND memory, which is more storage devices. And Doug, it's been quite
so the... So, Fred, now wait a minute. Now, do you have, like, stock still in the old company?
You know, I wish. I actually had some, and I'm like, I'm going to hold on to this because there's a lot of positives going on. And it made this really good jump, like 20, 30%, so I sold it. So here it is, 400% later. I kind of wish my 30% sale was. So, you know, I made a little bit of money on it, but yeah, my son still works there, and he's pretty happy.
Okay, well, Fred, I was suspecting that you had plotted. I thought maybe you had a good feeling that as soon as you retired, that they just wouldn't be able to keep up anymore, and then you just pump your stock price up. But obviously, it wasn't a conspiracy, at least not on your part.
No. But you know, the thing that makes our chips run, Doug, is the backbone is electricity. It's voltage.
That's right.
You know, when you get down to computer, you know, I was thinking about this today. We think of all the technology around us, and everybody would think of electricity as one of the elements. You know, we need, like in the NAND memory, the storage in your computers is all controlled by ones and zeros. Well, that's different voltage levels. And then NAND, that takes it even farther in different levels of voltage and voltage curves. Well, it got me thinking, you know, God really loves to use electricity, but we don't think of that when we look at the human body. We look out into space. We look at creation in general. Do you think electricity? Not really. You think of maybe a lightning bolt, and it's like, well, that's a storm. You know, what does that have to do with creation? But there's electricity all over the place, and that's one of the topics we're going to cover today. I'm looking forward to this article from Quantum Magazine, and it plays right into a field that you're familiar with, which is skin. I know that you're in the medical field, and you do a lot of stuff with skin. Well, it turns out electricity, God uses electricity in our skin, too. So those are all things we're going to talk about, how God loves using electricity more than I think we ever realized.
Yeah. Well, Fred, when you think of cosmology or even biology or even computers, I don't think of electricity first. I think of silica and wires and copper. But really, without the electricity, all that other stuff doesn't work, and God loves it. But before we get to that, Fred, we have another piece of evidence in a growing mountain of evidence that all scientists work for Walt Brown. Whether they know it or not, whether they're even trying or not, they're working for Walt Brown because they found some rocks on Mars, Fred, according to the Science Daily article. Rocks on Mars that are strange in color and in their makeup. Did you download this one? Have you reviewed this and done your work to prepare here?
Yeah, so Science Daily, this is from January 26th. Now, this is something that was reported on in December. We kept meaning to get to the story, Doug, so we need to cover it. Because again, every time we look at the latest science news, there's always something in there about discoveries that Walt Brown predicted decades ago, really. Dr. Walt Brown recently passed away, and he's the author of the hydroplate theory, which we support here. And that's this idea that the global flood was the release of the fountains of the Great Deep that shot up a bunch of material into space that became our comets and asteroids. And some of that is some of those material that ejecta pummeled the moon and made it out past Mars and possibly coalesced into Pluto. There's so many things that point to the Earth as an origin. Well, anyway, so it looks like the NASA's Mars Perseverance rover, it found these strange bright white rocks on Mars. And Purdue University did a study that, again, just appeared in this article in Science Daily. And so it found these white rocks. And as far as I know, they haven't really sampled them, but they do know that they're aluminum rich. They're clays. And it's called kaolinite. And they usually form on Earth only after millions of years. Of course, I got to get that in there. Of heavy rainfall in warm, humid environments. So, so Doug, you imagine a million-year-old rainstorm?
I was going to say, did it rain for a million years?
Man, I was going to go to Cancun, but it's been raining there for a million years. So I think I'll skip that destination spot.
Oh, and by the way, just really quickly, it's kaolinite. Don't anyone confuse that with koalinite. Koalinite is the rocks that are fuzzy with the big eyes and they're really cute. This is kaolinite, which is an aluminum-rich clay that normally forms. I wanted to stop the presses right there when you said it's called kaolinite, usually forms on Earth. I was like, well, hold up right there. Just that. It usually forms on Earth. Oh, go ahead, Fred.
Yeah. Well, if you just read what this guy from Purdue said, Bryony Horgan, he runs a lab at Purdue.
Yeah.
He said that when you see kaolinite, is that how you said it, Doug? I want to get that right now, not koalabearnite.
It's cowl, like a cowl on an engine.
Kaolinite, okay, on a place like Mars. Yeah, what Doug said. Where it's barren, cold, and with certainly no liquid water at the surface, it tells us there was once a lot of water than there is today.
Well, wait, Fred. Why does it tell us that? Couldn't it tell us a number of things? Why would you leap to that immediate conclusion? Well, let's just continue.
Okay,
go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things they said was, they say it's puzzling that the rocks are scattered across the landscape with no obvious source nearby, hinting at dramatic ancient events like floods, river transport, or get this, Doug, asteroid impacts. Okay, so now they're getting a little closer, maybe.
Okay.
You know, maybe this. So, I mean, we've got another idea. And, Doug, as far as explanation goes, there is another.
Hey, that's not a bad Yoda impersonation.
Okay, so we have another explanation. And they may not have, these rocks may not have been formed on Mars at all. You know, how about under the hydroplate theory, they may have been expelled in massive quantities from the global flood. And some of that debris easily would have made it to Mars and beyond. I mean, you look at the asteroid belt and you got all the comets flying around our solar system.
Yeah.
That all, by the way, have materials similar to what we find on Earth. In fact, Bennu, we've mentioned it many times, the asteroid Bennu has serpentinite on it. And you only find that mostly at the mid-oceanic ridge, which is the crack around the globe, which is where the Fountains of the Great Deep exploded and blew all this stuff into space.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Doug? Maybe Mars didn't have oceans. Maybe these rocks that they're finding that came from a watery environment, I think there's a pretty good chance they originated from Earth.
Yeah, I think so. And there's also a pretty good chance, Fred, that the way this article is written is yet more evidence that the media in general is biased to the left. They immediately, before they put the other logical assumptions that you might make, meteor impacts, floods, they say that it could mean that ancient evidence of water and that so that the bias is automatically toward old universe cosmology. They have to get that in there first before they go on with other reasonable assumptions, because this is a propaganda piece as much as anything else. And we know that because it appears in Science Daily, which is a propaganda organ of the leftist cosmology cabal, which is pretty much everybody. It's not a conspiracy when everybody's in on it. It's just an industry. But Here's the thing, Fred. It's not that Mars was once resembled a postcard from Bimini. It's that it's the fingerprints of Noah's flood when God judged the world to judge the sin of the earth by a great catastrophe and killed everybody except 8 people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you look at Mars and you see these things that just seem out of place, yeah, God could have created it like that, but why? You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It seems like, and just as this article said, it seems likely these rocks came from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that somewhere else, maybe the one watery environment we know of in the universe, Earth, maybe they came from Earth. Well, the thing I couldn't glean from this article, and I also looked at the study from Purdue, it wasn't clear to me how much samples that they've got of this rock. So this is where none other than Elon Musk comes into play, Doug. So he's been talking about going to Mars for decades, and I think we were supposed to be there by November 2025. So, Doug, we're like in early February 2026. I don't think we got a studio on Mars yet, do we?
No. Now,
we're not broadcasting from Mars.
We're not. You know,
even if we did have Earth travel to Mars, I don't think I'll be buying a ticket to go to Mars. Why would I want to go to that dead planet? But anyways, I digress. If we can get Elon Musk to get somebody to Mars and bring a rock back, just like Alan Shepard brought that moon rock back that came from Earth's beneath the Earth's surface in a watery environment, that would be super interesting. And we can predict here on Real Science Radio, if they do get samples of a rock that they can bring back, it's going to have a lot more material similar to what we see in the Earth's crust and very likely near the fountains of the Great Deep, the mid-oceanic ridge.
I wouldn't
be surprised if they also found serpentine and other watery environment materials, just like NASA said they found on that Earth rock that's on the moon.
That's right. So Elon Musk, we need to get a message out to Elon. You know, Fred, when he founded SpaceX, he went around raising private money by promising relatively gullible billionaires that he was going to put a man on Mars or put a rocket on Mars. And they all believed him. And he funded the company billions of dollars. And now, you know, he's getting ready for his IPO. He's going to try and do his IPO on his birthday, when all the planets align, and make himself the first trillionaire. It's real, Fred. This is actually happening. And one of the things he could use at his IPO announcement to gin up some more credibility, which for some reason he has no end of credibility. Anyway, he could say that we're going to get rocks from Mars and we're going to find out exactly what's going on. But he would have to stop with his XAI programming chatbots to talk dirty to people. He would have to stop long enough to get the program started to go get these rocks from Mars. So that would be great, Fred, if we could actually look at the actual rocks and sample them.
Yeah, I think at some point we will. And again, we've got a prediction here at Real Science Radio that it's going to fit very nicely with the hydroplate theory. And speaking of the hydroplate theories, at store.rsr.org, we have the 9th edition of the hydroplate theory book. You can pre-order now. And in fact, Doug, these are kind of going hot off the presses.
Yeah.
People are pre-ordering these books. We feel like it's going to be March timeframe, maybe late March, when we're actually going to start delivering them. We're expecting our big pallet of books to arrive maybe mid-March.
Yeah.
So you can look to get that book by the end of March. I had one guy reach out. He's buying a couple, and he teaches hydroplate theory in his school, which is great. So again, store.rsr.org. You can also sponsor a show. You can help keep us on the air by donating to Real Science Radio. All that money is 100% goes to promoting this show, video editing, whatever it is. Doug, have I given you a raise anytime in the last 5 years?
The last good joke I told you doubled my pay. I was so grateful.
Two times zero, zero. So, yep. So we don't get paid here. Everybody's a volunteer.
That's right.
But we need to pay for the radio time at KLTT AM 670 every Friday at 12:30 p.m. right in the lunchtime crunch hour. It's
That's right.
Crunch literally, right? I guess, or pun intended, while you're eating your lunch.
Yeah.
So anyways, please help us stay on the air. Go to store.rsr.org. And speaking of sponsoring a show, we got a guy, Frank, in Eagle River, Alaska.
Frank
sponsored us, and he's the sponsor of this week's Interesting Fact of the Week.
Which we'll do later on. We're going to do it right now,
but good try. Well, nice try, Doug, trying to get out of it.
You didn't let me finish the promo on the book. Folks, you got to order the book. Get the 9th edition of In the Beginning by Dr. Walt Brown, because we were planning earlier last year to tie the price to the price of precious metals. And we didn't do that because of some technical difficulties. But if we can make that happen, you're going to want to buy the book now. Because it might be a lot more 6 months from now. So get the 9th edition now before the price goes out of the world insane. Out of this world insane is what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm just trying to keep talking.
There you go, Doug.
That's it.
Now, that means if you did that and you wait, you could miss out on a 500% increase in the price of the book.
Yeah,
and I can't believe what gold and silver's doing. But anyways, that's another story.
Pretty crazy.
So, Doug, here is the interesting fact of the week.
Okay.
And before I give this, I'm going to give a little bit of a tease. After this, I have to have a mea culpa on our last interesting fact of the week.
Oh.
Which was an AI-generated incorrect claim that I should have researched further. But okay, so here's the interesting fact of the week. What part of your body generates an electrical field strong enough to be detected several feet away from you? Playtime.
For me?
Of your body.
My feet. Oh, I thought you said smell. I didn't know you said
electrical. Oh, yeah.
You're not Go ahead. State.
Okay. Your heart.
Oh, no kidding, right? Yeah, that, you know, if I would have thought about actually answering the question and instead of trying to come up with a joke, I might have figured that one out, Fred.
You probably would have. Okay. So, Doug, last week's interesting fact, I asked you what weighs about the same as a paperclip, runs on electricity, contains more moving parts than a jet engine, and performs about a quadrillion operations per second. And you said a cockroach, which wasn't bad because it was close to the answer. The answer is supposed to be the human brain.
Yeah.
And you're like, you question that. And it's like, okay, it turns out the brain weighs about 3 pounds. And you can maybe say that a paperclip weighs maybe as much as the neural circuits in a brain. I mean, I can do all kinds of calisthenics and gymnastics to try to get out of this one, Doug. But I think it's... I think the question itself got mutated a little bit by AI. Uh-huh. And I'm looking at a page right now. It says this. If you watch it on the YouTube, you'll see it on the screen. Approximately 1.5 grams or 3.3 pounds is the weight of a human brain, which is about the weight of a paperclip. It's right here. This is from AI. But
Did it say grams or did it say kilograms? Read that again.
Well, it's approximately 1.5 kilograms.
Okay.
Which is 3.3 pounds.
Yeah.
And then it goes on to say, which is about the weight of a paper clip.
See, you got to double check AI.
Yeah.
Right?
So then you go to a different AI and it says the average human brain weighs between 1.2 and 1.8 kilograms, about 2.6 to 4 pounds. While a standard paperclip weighs about 1 gram, therefore the brain is much heavier than a paperclip. So.
Yes, yes. Now, why does AI default to the metric system? I don't like that. See, it's all biased to the left, Fred. Everything.
Yep. Okay, Doug.
I have to do the math in my head. Every time they say kilograms, I'm like, okay, I got to try to figure this out. All right. But hey, I guess it helps make me smarter to make me have to think so.
Okay, so Doug, the next thing we want to talk about is electricity and how God loves to use it throughout creation. Well, we've discovered another area where he uses electricity, and this comes from Quantum Magazine. This was an article in middle of January, and it says that your body is doing electrical engineering while you're asleep.
Oh, good. Fred, that's because most of us can't do electrical engineering. That's why we need guys like you. We need engineers.
Well, you know, I can barely do electrical engineering, you know, while I'm awake, but.
All right. Well,
you know, and this gets to what Sal Cordova said. You know, at MIT, you've got lots of electrical engineers and computer engineers getting hired by biology related firms. because of their knowledge of not just electricity, but computer programming, because we're seeing all of that in nature.
Yeah.
So this article is super interesting because it has to do with electricity in the skin.
Oh, yeah. And Fred, we've had two shows just in the recent past that kind of set the table for this. You remember we had Dr. James Oshman on that energy medicine show we did. He talked about earthing and the body's conductive tissues, electrical currents, electrical fields, very interesting stuff. And Gerald Pollack, you remember, structured water, EZ water, right? Exclusion zone water, and the idea that biology and cells can function like a battery. Well, now Quanta Magazine just ran a piece based on a Nature paper showing something just really wild, Fred. Cells in your skin and the linings of your organs use bioelectricity to coordinate group decisions. Yeah, decisions between different cells and organelles. And a lot of it has to do with cell regeneration and disposal of either sick or degraded cells, where the cells seem to tell each other, hey, this cell is struggling, eject it. And so your skin is kind of like, it's like acting like the bouncer at the bar.
That's right. And Doug, you work in the field of skin medicine, right? To some degree. And you've worked with doctors for years in this field. Have you heard of this before?
Well, I wouldn't call it anything like medicine, but it does have to do with the skin, and I've been doing it for many years. And what's interesting, Fred, is I have heard about and talked about these events and cascades and the things that the skin does and signaling. I've talked about it all for 20 years, but I never really have put two and two together that the backbone of it all is really electricity. It's electricity that allows cell-to-cell communication. How do proteins communicate with an organelle? How do they deliver their information? And we see it's electricity, right?
Yeah. So there's this Jody Rosenblatt in this Nature article. She's at King's College London and the Francis Crick Institute. She says electrical currents are flowing through your body all the time, and they're doing things. So, Doug, according to the new results, as epithelial tissue grows, did I say that right, Doug? You're the skin expert.
Epithelial tissue is a fancy medical biological engineering term for your epidermis, which is the outer layer of your skin. Your skin is basically two layers, the dermis, the living tissue, and the epidermis, which we used to call dead tissue. It turns out it's way more sophisticated than just dead tissue, but it does eventually slough off. That's the epithelium. Yes. Good job, Fred, pronouncing that, by the way.
Okay. So this tissue, the cells are packed more tightly together, and that increases the electrical current flowing through each cell's membrane. And so a weak, old, energy-starved cell will struggle to compensate, triggering a response that sends water rushing out of the cell. So this gets to the Dr. Gerald Pollack, which was a great show, by the way, shriveling it up, marking it for death. In this way, electricity acts like a health checkup for the tissue and guides the pruning process.
And Fred, what people might not know, in addition to that cell losing all of its water and shriveling up, and then it's eventually going to slough off, right? It's been marked for death. Well, before it does that, the cells actually, they migrate to the very top of the epithelium, the very outer layer of your skin, and they form a concave shape. They start to bend because they're all dried out, and they become translucent, and they actually reflect harmful UV radiation. In their final death throes, they form a sort of a little suit of armor of what are called, they're no longer keratinocytes, they become corneocytes. They're like a hard suit of armor that actually protects your skin from impacts and reflect armor. And then they slough off and die and go off and get recycled. And it's all very sophisticated and amazing.
And they say that, you know, where this can really matter too is too much growth, you know, without this electrical mechanism, there wouldn't be the removal, and that can contribute to cancer, to tumors. And even, I found this interesting, even to asthma, as it's one of the conditions that can get out of whack if this thing isn't working. So there's a lot of reason for this electrical design, and who would have thought that, you know, you got this electricity running through your skin all the time?
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing stuff. So a little bit more from the article. This is a very interesting discovery, they say, finding that bioelectricity is the earliest event during this cell extrusion process, which it's really obvious in the skin, but it's going on all throughout your body. Ions are atoms or molecules that carry charge because of extra or missing electrons, which I don't know that. That's like fundamental electricity 101, right, Fred?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Well, that's news to me. These ions, they either have a negative or a positive charge, and they can enter and exit cells only through specialized protein channels and pumps, just like a hydroelectric plant, right, can use surplus energy to pump water back up the reservoir for later use. Cells use their chemical energy to pump ions uphill against the electrical flow. By controlling the natural current and letting positive or negative charge build up on either side of their membranes, cells maintain their membrane potential. And if this energy is used or leaks away, cells can replenish it by expending more of their chemical energy. It's just shocking, Fred. It's amazing. And so we think, I've always thought of electricity like, yeah, maybe in my brain, there's like this sparky brain stuff going on. But it's more than that, Fred. It's like sparky everything everywhere going on.
Yeah. Just like Gerald Pollack said, they've got really good evidence of this battery in your cell. And now we're looking at it in the skin. And basically, it seems like the tissue is running a stress test. And can the skin tissue, cells, can they hold their voltage under pressure? And so that's where it's kind of like a group decision idea. And this Rosenblatt describes the cells as bullying each other, probing for the weakest link. Now, that's kind of almost implying some kind of Darwinian thing. But
well,
this is obviously a design. And what struck me was how electricity is used so often by God, and we just miss it. You know, we're discovering it now in more recent scientific times. But you look back again, we talked about Micron and the memory chips and computers, and everything's running off electricity. But it turns out our body is running quite a bit off of electricity, and it just ties in with so many other things that we see in nature. You know, Doug, and we'll get to this.
And what we do on the show, Fred, I mentioned Dr. Oshman. Remember, he basically said that your body is conductive. We talked about the body having conductive properties, electrical fields, currents, and all of that.
Yeah. And so to me, if you think about just conception, I mean, you go back to the very moment of conception.
Oh, yeah.
And Doug, we didn't talk a lot about this, but when they discovered the zinc spark, you know, they have this mechanism that happens at conception, and you see this electrical charge. And that is just so remarkable to me. It's the spark of life, and you can see this. And what I'd like to do is to show you what this looks like with some mouse sperm and egg.
So this is actual observed data. This isn't
absolutely
just mathematical.
And this is from a little while ago. Yeah, I think this is at least 5 years ago.
Yeah,
that they published this, but it's this spark of life. And let's just quickly watch this unfold. And then, Doug, here's an example of the human egg being fertilized in the moment of conception.
It's mind-boggling, Fred. Mind-boggling. I need an engineer to explain it to me. Help me. What did I just see?
Well, so this is from a study they did on this. And so there's this fast block. And so what it is, what's going on here is if the egg let more than one sperm in, it'd be called polyspermy, and that's really, really bad. The organism isn't going to survive that. So how did God design it so that only one sperm can get in? And once it gets in, everything gets locked out. And that's where this spark and this electricity comes into play. It's blocking all the other ones out when this event occurs. Now, in software development and electrical engineering, there's things called mutexes and semaphores where we design it where only there are certain cases where we only want one thing to run at a time. We don't want something interrupting it. And so we'll use a thing called a mutex. Well, here in this design, there's a thing called fast block, and it's completely electrical. And so there's this resting membrane potential across the egg. It changes from about minus 70 to 10 millivolts within 1 to 3 seconds after fertilization. So that's almost instantaneously after fertilization. There's this potential change in voltage from minus 70 to plus 10 millivolts. It's amazing. And so that right there, then that shuts everything else off. The other sperm can't get in. There's this other mechanical process. It's called slow block. And there's these cortical granules that release their contents into space between the egg cell membrane and its outer coating. And it creates a hard envelope that sperm can't get through. And that lasts about a minute. So you've got this fast block that lasts a second. And then you've got this other mechanical device process that lasts about a minute. So this is what a scientist said that was studying this. He said, on cue, at the time of fertilization, we see the egg release thousands of packages, each dumping a million zinc atoms. So the key here is it uses zinc. And then it's quiet. Then there's another burst of zinc release. Each egg has 4 or 5 of these periodic sparks. He says this, it's beautiful to see orchestrated much like a symphony. So now, Doug, how in the world would that happen over time and millions of years and natural selection? And just can't happen. That has to be designed up front. And I just think at the microscopic level, we're seeing how cells use voltage gradients. We're seeing that in the shows we're doing on Real Science Radio. And now we've got another one with the skin.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at the moment.
Notice, Fred, how the scientist uses the term beautiful and orchestrated, which, Fred, those are scientific terms, because when you look at real science that's observable and you can actually follow the data and log it and do the math, it ends up being beautiful, because it is beautiful, because the Creator liked orderly, beautiful things. And so when we see it and we uncover it, how else can you describe it, Fred, except beautiful?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Wow.
So, and then even, Doug, we've had shows on the plasma universe. You know,
we think
that standard cosmology, dark matter, dark energy, that's all wrong. Well, there's a lot of scientists who see electric currents and plasma structures guiding the large-scale tapestry of the galaxies. And
that's right.
God uses electricity a lot, and we need to be more mindful of that. We're going to do more shows this year. We'll have shows coming up on plasma cosmology and the interesting evidence that's pointing more to that as a way that God used to create the universe.
Yeah.
All in the matter of 6 days.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, the whole thing.
Have you ever seen a child encounter one of those plasma balls where you touch it and the lightning comes to your finger? We had one of those at the homeschool conference, you remember?
Yeah, absolutely. Colorado Homeschool Conference. We're going to be there again, Doug, this June. I think it's somewhere in the 12th, 10th to the 12th or something. We're all set up to be at the Colorado Homeschool Conference again.
Well, we will get dates for people so they can come out. And I'll tell you, Fred, there's few things as pleasant and just a palate cleanser to just watch a child touch one of those plasma balls. And you know why the child is so fascinated by the plasma ball? Is because it's beautiful. It's beautiful, and it's exciting, like God's creation. And that's why I love doing this show with you, Fred, and talking about things like electrical, biological communications and plasma filaments. It's all just beautiful and wonderful, and it points to our Creator who's beautiful and wonderful and wants us to have things that are beautiful and wonderful. And it's just amazing to see and to watch.
So, Doug, you're right. It is beautiful. And, you know, you go back to the chips that we talked about at the start of the show, Micron, and how we build these memory chips, DRAM, and storage devices called NAND memory. And, Doug, when you cut those chips open and you look at them with a microscope, the farther in you look, the more simple it gets. But when you look at God's design, you cut open a cell and you look at it, it gets more and more complicated and complex, yeah. And the design is just mind-boggling. And you think about, again, electricity is one of the main driving forces to what we do in technology. And it also turns out God uses electricity all over the place. It's so interesting, from the cosmos to the spark of life at conception, to electricity running throughout your body, you know, in your heart, the magnetic field that is created because when a current runs, you get a magnetic field. And then now with the electric currents in our skin, you know, this is all new stuff. And we need to be aware that it looks like God likes electricity a lot. So,
yeah. From the biggest to the tiniest.
Yes.
He's figured out all the right voltages for all of it. It's amazing to watch, Fred. I appreciate you giving me and our audience the opportunity.
Yep. Thank you, Doug. And again, you can go to store.rsr.org. If you like our show, please leave a comment, like our videos, whatever you can. If you want to dislike them, that's fine too. Leave comments. We'll try to read the comments when we can, but please support us, subscribe to the channel, listen to us on KLTT AM 670 in Denver every Friday at 12:30, and go to store.rsr.org. That's where we can really use your help. So for my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.